Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10. Deep is tight end.
And Raja Bell.
Bell has done 22 to Raja.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
All right, what's going on? Welcome to Cannell and Bell. This episode is presented by Loci, our newest sponsor. I'm ready to rock my game day collection bracelet for Florida State when they tip off in the tournament later this week. We'll have more on Loci and a coupon code later in the show. Monster show for you. It is bracket day. The brackets are set. We get to start filling them out. We got to get to possible tanking in the NFL as the team looks like it might be doing that. LeBron's body language. It's like that's what we're getting to in the NBA. We got to break down LeBron's body language. We're going to get to all that.
You have an extra shot of like espresso this morning or something?
You're hurting a little bit.
You were fired up. Like reads, you were fired up. Like you had an energy.
Well, I'm pumped up for my Loci right now.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Do you think you can beat sickness? Mentally?
No.
Physically?
No.
Anything?
I mean, physically, yeah, there are things you can do to support your immune system that can help you beat sickness, but like mentally, no.
So I'm leaving for Las Vegas tomorrow night, so I'm a little bit nervous about this, but my daughter has a cold, like scratchy throat, runny nose, all that stuff. So Friday night, get a little tickle.
Yeah.
And I don't like the little tickle. So it was a long weekend too, bunch of kid stuff. So Saturday, got home, I caddied for my daughter Saturday morning, got home, took a 3-hour nap.
Yep.
I haven't taken over a 30-minute nap in probably 10 years. 3 hours I slept. So I was like, all right, that's got to be kind of good. Still a little scratchy. Today I got a little run. I'm trying to beat this.
Okay,
mentally,
I got you.
I'm pounding all kind of emergencies, all this type of stuff.
Yep.
So maybe it's some of those drugs, like not – they're all like just pump-up drugs.
Yes,
like,
correct.
Not anything prescription.
Some of the,
you know what I mean?
All the immune support
all
that you're – yes.
Stuff. So
right.
Some of those do give you energy. Maybe
that
that's
is.
Why I'm bouncing
yeah.
off the walls today. In any case, it is tournament time. It is March Madness.
Sure.
The tournament field is set. Guess who got 3 out of the 4 number 1 seeds in the tournament?
Sunbelt baby.
No, not the Sunbelt.
The
ACC.
Okay.
The Atlantic Coast Conference comes in with 3 number 1 seeds. It's Duke, obviously. Although they weren't that obvious, I guess. They needed the performance
yeah.
with Zion back.
Yep.
Virginia was really obvious, and North Carolina gets the number 1 seed too. Gonzaga had the 4th one. I don't have any problem with this whatsoever. Who has the biggest beef? Is it Tennessee, who the committee said, oh, if they would have won the SEC tournament, instead they got beat by Auburn, they would have taken a number one spot? Is there somebody out there that has a legit beef? That's always my question. Like, is there a team more deserving? And if you stack anybody else up against Duke, Virginia, or North Carolina, I would have a real tough time saying, yeah, those teams are better.
No, look, I think that if Tennessee had won, they would have a beef, and their argument would probably be, well, you know, UVA didn't win and they got knocked out, but UVA's... Like, when you go through the metrics and you do the numbers on, like, offensive efficiency and all of that, UVA's numbers are off the charts for just about everything. So they're deserving of a number one seed. They put it through all these analytical, like, scenarios. UVA is a number one seed. I have no beef. Look, the ACC, when you're a young kid and you're dreaming of playing college basketball, unless it's, like, your local team, most kids dream of playing in the ACC. They want to play for a Duke or a Carolina or a team, you know, a team like that. So I really don't have a problem with it. They're the best conference in America. They deserve the 3.
Yeah, I mean, they've got depth. They've got title challengers. They've got it all
when
it comes down to it. And according to Vegas, the top 4 favorites to win are Duke at 9-4, Gonzaga at 5-1, North Carolina at 6-1, and Virginia 13-2. So the Vegas odds –
they support
exactly those top 4 seeds. Kentucky actually coming in there at 14-1, right outside of that. Michigan State, then Tennessee is at 16-1 odds to win it all. Do you have any issue? I mean, that's kind of like what people do. I thought it was a little bit boring, the whole bracket reveal.
I didn't watch it.
I watched some of it,
yeah.
But I don't think there was any real surprise. Some of the bubble teams were really weak. Some of the bubble teams that got left out. So it was kind of like, you know, NC State was upset. They put out a big press release. They weren't even the number one seed in the NIT.
Right.
That went to UNC Greensboro. So like, yeah, you can go ahead. I love when an athletic director makes a public plea. Like, it's not going to do anything. It's just to appease your fans and your boosters. Like, that's the only reason you would put out this formal protest.
Yeah. I mean, look, here's the deal. Go out and win the NIT. Like, that's the best way to support your case for having been in the NCAA tournament. And there are only a certain amount of teams that get in. Somebody got to get left out. But if you're that good, claim an NIT championship, and then you'll have grounds for your argument, right? But until then.
But even then, it won't change
anything. It won't change anything.
But an NIT.
But point being, you could sit there and then say, hey, man, we could have made some noise in that tournament, and that's the only way you do it. You get knocked out in round two or three of the NIT tournament, you had no business being in the NCAAs anyway.
You know what's more likely to happen because you are distracted and upset is you're going to get knocked out of the NIT tournament because you're too worried about complaining about the other tournament.
We begged 1 year to get in the NIT. We were, I forget, it was my junior year at FIU. We had beat some really good teams. We lost a top 25 college of Charleston in our championship game. And we made a plea. Like, our athletic director came out, you know, our coach and some of the people in the organization wanted us, you know, to publicly, beg for the NIT. We did it. And they were like, yeah, no, no thanks. Yeah, we're good. No, we're good. Thanks.
That's got to suck. As a player, too. You're we're good. They're just all, everything's deflated out of there. The thing I don't like, and it happens every single year because it's the way that you get automatic bids is I don't love the conference champions getting an automatic bid because you see it happen a lot of times when the number one seed, who is probably the best team from that conference, they win the regular season conference champion crown. And then in a one game kind of winner takes all scenario, they get bounced and they get on the outside looking in. I wish that the automatic bid would go to the regular season conference champion. And then it would really, but the problem with that is you would lose a lot of money from the TV contracts.
Yeah.
Why do you even have the conference tournament?
I actually like I'm not saying that it's perfect.
Right.
Because there are going to be those teams that go, I don't know, 25-2 in their regular season and then have one bad night in a conference championship game and they don't get to play in the tournament. I don't know that that's fair to a mid-major team that's got that kind of body of work, but I like the tournament vibe. It's a good time of year. I like to pop around on the TV and see all these mid-major conferences and their title games on there that actually mean something. You know, I enjoy that. And so I don't know that it's right. And there are always going to be teams that feel like they kind of got screwed in the equation, but I enjoy it. I don't have a problem with it.
I don't pay as much attention to college basketball. But I do feel like this is what drives me nuts about sports. And I heard it yesterday on some of the selection shows was, you know, eye test. Who do you think is better? That's why I do like it pretty clear cut where at least there's these automatic bids where if you win your tournament, you are in. What gets a little bit dicey is when you have some of those teams that have really strong records, like UNC Greensboro, who is not a Power Five or an ACC team. They have a really impressive year at 28-6, but then they miss out in the SoCon final. They lose. And so then they get bounced for a team that may not be as good, but they played against better competition all year.
There's no real correct answer as to how you would determine which one of those teams, a middle of the pack record wise power school versus a better record smaller school. Either one wins their conference championship and you got to decide between the two to put them in the NCAA tournament.
This is what bothers me. And this is the way it works a lot in football is that the brands, because they're bigger, they want them in the tournament.
Well, here's the deal. And this is what I was going to say. Cause I went to small schools. Like Boston University and FIU, both small schools. And so you would probably think I would champion for the small school. If I had to decide, I'm taking the bigger school.
Right.
I'm taking more fans coming to the games and I'm taking like a better schedule played and potential. Yeah. Listen, when I played at a small school, and this isn't every small school, part of my problem when I got to the next level was acclimating to all of that size that I don't see on a nightly basis. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was okay. But when you're not playing against, you know, ACC competition all the time and seeing 6'11", 6'10", 6'9", and two guards that are standing 6'5", and 6'4", and you're rolling in there as some small, like that's daunting, right? And so I would rather take a swing on a team that was like, you know, run of the mill, kind of above average that plays that every night because I feel like they'll have more of a success rate in the long run than the smaller school trying to survive.
So I got a pretty good look at Duke. Obviously, everybody's been watching him since Zion came back and, you know, throughout the entire season. I was watching him closely because I was watching we gave out our lock the other night. Our locks are 0-2. But to be fair, I did text our little show group. I did say Duke was a lock over Florida State. I was trying to put the reverse, you know, Jedi mind trick on him. But Duke ended up beating Florida State for the ACC championship. They get the number one overall seed. They're a 2-1 favorite from Vegas. Even with all that being said, it's basketball and it's not a series. It's a one game scenario. If they're not good from 3-point from behind the arc. They're the worst team in the country. They're the worst 3-point shooting team in the tournament. Not in the country, in the tournament of the 68 teams. But I still think they're beatable. I actually just filled out my bracket and I think I have them winning. But that doesn't mean they're going to win. They get a night when they're cold and another team lights it up from three. Even as great as Zion is and they're healthy, I still think they're beatable.
I'm going to touch on Duke in a second because I agree with you 100%. UVA, very beatable. Like, I mean, very beatable. Florida State just knocked them off.
You called it before that one.
But they historically don't fare super well in the tournament, right? Very beatable. Gonzaga didn't even win, like St. Mary's knocked them off the other night. That's a beatable squad. When you're losing, like, now that could be an outlier, but to your point, like, all of these number ones, North Carolina, all of these teams are beatable, these number ones. I do think Duke winds up winning it, and I picked them too. I know, right? They don't shoot to three great. They don't, but they're not built to do that. It's kind of like they know how they have to play, and what they have that no one else has in college basketball is Zion. And I don't even mean his skill set. Like, I don't mean like the electrifying dunks that you see and, like, you know, the forage to the rim. And like, it's not that. He's got this indomitable, like, will that he just affects the game. He's not going to lose. Like, that last second, like, he shoots a shot, like, basically, like, blew everybody out of the way and then tapped it in. Like, the way he just will not let his team lose is something that is unique to college basketball in some regards. Like, you don't see guys that just, like, physically just impose their will on games and take them over. And he's got the ability to do that. Right. And I think their mindset is a little different than most freshman teams' mindset.
Oh, for sure.
Both these guys are pros. Like, Cam Reddish is a borderline, but he's a pro too. Like, these dudes are, they're coming in with the gas. They're ready to go.
Are you changing your mind at all about Zion being better than RJ Barrett?
No.
Because every time I watch him shoot a three, I'm like, yeah, Rajah's right. But then I saw him, like, making the full court pass, where threaded the needle down the lane. I'm like, oh, that was pretty good. He's pretty good.
He is fantastic. So I had a house full of, like, some of my sixth graders were around because we had time in between games, and I overheard them arguing the same thing. And so one of them turned around and asked me about Zion versus RJ. And I was like, look, Zion is clearly a better college basketball player than RJ Barrett. And if I were a general manager, I'm telling you now, I would pick Zion first. I would have to. There's a lot that goes along with the Zion brand.
Right.
At the end of the day, don't be surprised if RJ has a better pro career than Zion. They're skill sets that you know will translate. And Zion has to find a lane to play in. I'm not saying he's not going to be good, but I'm saying RJ, I think, will be a better pro because he has a more defined, skill set for what they're going to ask at the pro game.
So it'll be fun to watch and see how they do, in this tournament. Both you and I'm going to have to change mine now. They take on, the winner of somebody, North Dakota State and North Carolina Central, I believe is ACC, in the first one. So we'll have to keep an eye on them. If I was doing the bracket and it was kind of a boring year like this where the bubble teams weren't that good, you know what I would look for? Like, intriguing storylines. Yeah. So we've got a couple of them though, and I don't know if the committee did this on purpose. I doubt it, but I wish they would. Louisville plays Minnesota. So Rick Pitino's son, Richard, coaches Minnesota. Pitino has a $38.7 million lawsuit against Louisville for breach of contract that is still pending. Like, there's going to be a ton of things to talk about in this one. I was curious if Pitino would go. It doesn't appear so because he's in Greece.
Right.
Where he's coaching. Do you want to take a stab at that name?
Where is it?
Panathinaikos?
Panathinaikos. Yeah.
You sound like you knew that. Panathinaikos. Did you know that?
I did, yeah, because I mean, I'm
yeah, you're familiar.
They were a potential suitor at one point, so I had to know their name.
Did you ever take a visit?
No. I wound up playing in Spain.
I took a visit to Vancouver for the BC Lions.
Yeah, did you?
Knowing I wasn't going to play, but I was Vancouver was awesome. It almost talked me into playing, but I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. That is one storyline that I would like to see play out, although I don't think Pitino goes there. You know the other one? LSU plays Yale. And it's not on purpose, and I don't even know if anybody notices it, but Yale was at the center of the bribery scandal as somebody paid, you know, I forget, was the women's lacrosse, whatever sport it was, $1.2 million. So there's part of a scandal. Will Wade obviously is not coaching LSU because of the bribery scandal or the offer that he potentially made one of their players. So they're both kind of scandal-ridden programs right there. So that's a game for me. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, that is interesting. I wonder if any of that, like Louisville and Minnesota, you don't think. What is the percent chance that factored in? What do you think?
It depends on if there are any trolls on the selection committee that let's mess with them. That would totally be.
It's kind of interesting though. Not the second one, not as much with the scandal game, but the Richard Pitino in Minnesota up against Louisville is a really interesting one. I wonder if there was anything there. I actually think both of these are intriguing matchups too. Like, that's a 7-10 and the other one's 5-12.
Right.
I think in both cases, the underdogs could potentially win those games.
Do you have any strategy for your bracket selection?
Absolutely none.
I don't either.
Dude, I like...
By the way, if you haven't seen it yet, go on to at CBS Sports HQ, the Twitter handle. There's a pretty good promo going out for you get to see Raja's acting skills.
Correct.
You get to see Coca's acting skills. A lot of people around the office. Chris Hassel has a cameo in there. Yep. I am fielding calls currently from Hollywood. They saw it.
Did they mistake you as Bradley Cooper?
No, Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt. Oh, yeah.
So clearly, I'm going to start fielding those and go with the best offer that's out there. So you can check that out. Make sure you go compete against us too. It's going to be a lot of fun. You can find the best odds on Sportsline, because if you want to win your bracket, right, there's a no-brainer. Sportsline can help you with office bragging rights. Last year, their optimal bracket finished in the top 5% of CBS Sports brackets and called Villanova winning it all, and their upset bracket called 12 of 18 first-round upsets by double-digit seeds the past 3 years. So visit sportsline.com/brackets for the insight you need to win. Sign up for Sportsline using the promo code PLAYER, and you'll get your first month of Sportsline access for just $1. Go check it out. Really good info there.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Tiger Woods could have used a little balance during the weekend. A little bit all over the place, but... overall, and I feel like this is, like we repeat ourselves in this discussion, I know he wants to get a win, but I feel like he's exactly where he needs to be. He was 600 for the tournament. He had Sunday best round of 69. He finished in the tie for 30th. I thought his swing looked good. I thought he looks healthy. You take away the quad that he had on 17. I don't know if you saw that on Friday.
Stealing my thunder, bro. We were watching
live. That's right. You went berserk when he did that. If you take away that one, he leaps like into the top, 15 or
correct.
Top 10. So, overall, I think he's right where he needs to be as he kind of keeps dialing in for the Masters. Again, with Tiger Woods, he already, you know, he's got, what, 80 tour wins?
Yeah.
Those aren't what he's trying to get. Obviously, he is. But what my point being, he's always wanted to catch Jack in the 18 majors. And that, to me, would officially say, all right, Tiger's back. But I think he's exactly where he needs to be as far as the majors go.
I felt like I'm going to echo what you just said. If he doesn't quadruple on day two, what was that, Friday?
Yeah.
I feel like it's a different round. And I'm not saying he would have won it, but I think, you know, obviously his position would have changed dramatically. But I think the whole mindset, like, of whether he was in the hunt or not, I think it becomes a different thing. And I didn't even care whether he was in the hunt or not. I think he came out this week and you could hear by all accounts his focus was on putting. He's working with a new putting instructor. What's the guy's name? Do you remember?
I don't. I know he's got the new guy.
But he putted well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you're looking at Tiger, I the way I look at him is I'm just looking for him to keep addressing the part of his game that he thinks needs the work. And if he's making strides in those categories, I have no doubt that he's going to round into form at some point. As he plays more golf and as he gets more tournaments under his belt, if he felt like putting was a thing for him that he needed to address, the fact that he addressed it and he looked really comfortable with the putter this weekend, like, I'm fine with that. That quad was, you know, that's the 17th green at Sawgrass. Like, it gets a lot of people. It got him. Other than that, I think he's positioned well.
Yep. This is the only thing that makes me a little bit nervous. Obviously, he pulled out of Bay Hill, Arnold Palmer's invitational
neck.
Because of an issue. Here's his quote. You ready?
I
don't love the Dr.
Don't
Woods
do it.
Comments.
Don't do it.
I needed that. Here you go. I needed that, Woods said. I needed to get that organized. If my back gets tight, it's going to go up the chain. So I got to start at ground zero and get my lower back moving properly and get the firing sequence good. And then after the rest of the chain will take care of itself. Dr. Woods.
Yeah, I don't love that. Right, but hey, you know what? Here's what I'll say. Steve Nash. Huge on all that stuff.
Really?
Huge on all that.
Firing sequences?
Yes, and I'm real talk, I should put some stock in it because I used to watch Steve train with, I forget his name, was Rick, I forget what it, Rick, it doesn't matter, from Canada, but he'd bring him down and Steve would work on all this 1 foot, like, core movement.
Right.
And they'd be doing this for like an hour and a half. But no, like, it was, he had a bad back.
Right.
And for
I have a bad back. You have a bad back.
Right. Maybe we done crap. Right. But that was his whole thing, his core, and he could get his core engaged, and he can have all that stuff together. Then the whole kinetic chain would be in order and produce like multiple MVP, like back to back MVPs and all that. So
could have been
put
you.
Stock in it.
That could have been you. The thing that drives me nuts about back issues is exactly what you're talking about. It's very tedious and monotonous and time consuming.
Right.
Like, I only have so much time in a day that I can work out. I want to sweat. I want to do something. I want to lift.
Yeah.
I don't want to sit there and just focus on core for
20 minutes.
It wastes 20 minutes, but it obviously does.
It pays dividends. Yeah.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Miami.
It's magic.
Dolphins. We've read in our thing. Doing. Is Miami the Magic City?
Yeah, Miami's Magic City.
I thought Orlando was the Magic
City. A lot of people call themselves the Magic City. Yeah. I think
Atlanta might be.
Somewhere in Alabama calls themselves the Magic
City. We'll say Miami's the Magic City.
Miami's the Magic
City. They are the Magic City. So Ryan Fitzpatrick is the new starting quarterback for the Dolphins. Got off to that fantastic start last year when Jameis Winston was suspended. Ryan Fitzpatrick has played for over a quarter of the teams in the NFL. Do you realize that? He's played on eight different teams. It's insane the amount of teams he's doing. But he is the definition of a holdover quarterback who can win you some games. He's going to learn the system. Seems like the guys like playing with him.
Sure.
But he's never going to be your long-term starter. And that's what the Dolphins need, because Tyrod Taylor spurned him. Teddy Bridgewater spurned him. Well, this is the thing. I was going to say, I guarantee you they draft a quarterback. I do think they have to draft a quarterback, but I don't know if they take them with their 13th overall pick now.
Yeah, I don't think they address quarterback need this year. I think they're in next year's draft.
So you think they're in for the tank?
Yeah, I mean, like it says, what's it say here? That Stephen Ross is enamored with Tua Tagovailoa, and like that's what they're all in for the tank. But here's the deal from Ryan Fitzpatrick's. It's $11 million, what, guaranteed?
Yep.
And with incentives, it could be up to $17 to $20 million. If
not going to break the bank. It's perfect.
And if I play well enough where they can't get Tua, or even if they get Tua and I played well enough and they want to shelve Tua for a year and like,
right.
I could flip this into, I don't know, like $35 million. Like, do you know what I mean? So it's not a bad look for Fitzmagic either. And if Fitzmagic is feast or famine.
Man, he came back to reality.
Yeah, he's going to look fantastic, and then it's going to be like I'm throwing the ball to the other team. So, you know, if he's the worst version of himself and you're the Dolphins, you're fine.
I had no idea he fell off that dramatically, because it was only two games where he lit it up, and he actually had four 400-yard passing games, but the interceptions what were kind of alarming. Over the first two games, 8 touchdowns, 1 interception. Then over this final 6 games that he started, 9 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. Granted, the Bucs were bad, but the Dolphins are going to be bad too. I find it interesting.
You know what he's not going to have? He's not going to have DeSean Jackson Evans throw the ball to.
No.
So like you could pencil in some more INTs probably for Fitzmagic.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty bad. This is where I think Stephen Roth, some of these owners get in their own way. And it, you know, according to Barry Jackson, the Miami Herald, it says he has a fascination and wants to make Tua Tagovailoa a priority for next year's draft. I still don't know if Tua is a lock in the NFL. Like, he was exposed a little bit against Clemson. Did not look that great. I think you're almost better. The sure thing to me is Trevor Lawrence, but you have to wait another year. So yeah, if you're thinking, hey, I only have 1 year, then you're going Tua.
It's a good look for Fitzmagic.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe parlay.
Keep it rolling
time. Rolling.
So we talked, we had the story yesterday or Friday about buying a jersey number when I had to pay to have number 13. What would you pay for a nickname?
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
My nicknames come like a dime a dozen. You might have 7 different nicknames if you're in my family.
Right. Minka Fitzpatrick has also been called Fitzmagic. So I think they can both do it. Maybe they have t-shirts made up together.
It can't be Fitzmagic.
You can't?
Nah, man. Like, you got to have that glorious beard to go with Fitzmagic. There's something that goes, like, you got to have, I like Minka, fantastic player.
Yeah.
But there's like a swag that comes with Fitzmagic, right? Like, you saw him at the press conference.
Yeah, but what if the swag isn't even his own outfit? That was DeSean Jackson's.
It doesn't matter. It's the personality to wear someone else's outfit is the actual swag, right? He looks like Conor McGregor. Like, he's the Fitzmagic guy.
What if he comes down here and he shaves the beard and he's just like nerdy, like Harvard looking?
Then you're Ryan.
Right?
Then we'll call you Ryan.
You're straight Ryan.
You're Ryan, bro.
Don't get any nickname whatsoever.
They really go Ryan to Ryan.
What's that?
His name's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill to Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, they did.
Ryan to Ryan.
The thing that made no sense, zero sense whatsoever for me, was the Titans traded for Ryan Tannehill, because everybody and their brother knew Tannehill was going to get cut by the Dolphins. Why did they send anything? And I get it wasn't that much of a deal and they had him restructure so that he's more of a backup salary, but you could have not given up anything.
Correct.
And had him come to your team.
Correct.
And I guess there's always, in theory, the chance that he would have found another situation more attractive, but I did not understand from the Titans standpoint of why they traded him.
Does that say more about the way they feel about Mariota as a quarterback or the way they feel about Mariota's potential health that you go out and get a backup? Because, I mean,
probably a little bit of both.
Right.
And it's interesting because I think Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, who were drafted 1 and 2 in the same class, are at really crucial points of their career where they're both getting picked up. You know, one, they have one more year left on their rookie deals and they have to prove it because neither one of them have been spectacular. They've been okay.
Right.
And that's not a good place to be if you're a franchise to have a quarterback who's okay.
You know who else was okay? Ryan Tannehill.
Exactly. He might have been
slightly
worse. And he was way more injured than either one of those two guys. Although I do think it's probably a combination. Let's get Tannehill to push Mariota a little bit.
Right.
But also, if he gets hurt, we've got a guy who's played a lot of meaningful snaps and can come in and be a good backup. It'll be interesting to see how the Miami Dolphins fans react to a tanking, philosophy because they're not, Dolphins fans are fair weather, like a lot of fan bases. The stadium is not going to be full if they were 500. I wonder how much heat Stephen Ross is going to have to take because you have to be patient and you better, and you're like Brian Flores, new hire. How are they going to be if they're 2-14 or 3-13?
Here's what I'll say to that. Like if Philadelphia 76ers fans can be patient and trust the process, right? And
what happened to your boy Sam Hinkie though? He got run off.
No,
I know. Like they weren't.
Yeah, but ultimately, look where they are now. Like you're sitting,
right?
Like
right.
You're looking pretty. Like Dolphins, you've experienced what messing around in the middle of the pack gets you. It's what it's got you the last 5 years. Mediocre everything. Like have a little bit of patience. Like let's see if I just want to know if I'm a fan that you have a plan. Like it's kind of the thing I say about like coaches when they come in the locker room. If you're unsure and you don't have a plan, everybody's going to be in panic mode. Guys are going to be looking around like, uh-oh, we got a problem.
Yep.
If you come in, I say this about Tyrone Corbin, seriously. I say, listen, even if it's not right, just come in and say it authoritatively. Like, say it to the locker room like you mean it and you know you mean it so they know you mean it.
Right.
There'll be people that be like, I don't know that that's right, but everybody else will be like, he means that. You come in there and you're like, dog, you're out.
People see right through it.
Give me a plan.
Right.
But right?
You can't come out and publicly say you're tanking, though. That's the problem with tanking.
We are looking towards the future.
Yes, there it is. That's right. How you do it. Do you think Sam Hinkie's out there just bitter?
Salty, yes.
He
salty.
Should be, yes. Too, because his plan actually worked. They just weren't as patient. All right, welcome back, Kanell and Bell. So this NBA was in action last night. The Sixers against the Bucks in what could be a preview of the Eastern Conference Final. Joel Embiid versus Giannis was pretty epic. Like, I could take a 7-game series of these two going toe-to-toe for one another. There was also the Giannis versus Ben Simmons aspect where those guys were getting
into
it.
Call that boy a baby.
Oh, and there was a little extra adjective.
Added into that one.
And then Ben Simmons got him back, although it wasn't as good, right?
No, but it was still good.
Yeah, it was still good.
The Giannis was better because he just straight big boyed him. Like, he went right through his chest and dunked it, but Ben sat on his neck, so that's pretty good too.
All right, so the Sixers ended up winning the game 130-125. Joel Embiid had 40. Giannis had 52. Going toe-to-toe for it. They each had 14 points in the fourth quarter. So you talk about clutch time to go at it.
Hey, man, that was disgusting for a 7-footer. Can we roll that back? Do we have any pausable, no, we can't do it?
Like a DVR effect?
No, all right, my bad.
Giannis coming back through the lane with the left hand. I mean, these dudes were trained.
This is it, big boy. Take that shoulder.
Just backed him down. He did look like a baby. He looked like an eighth grader.
Look how yoked up that cat is, man. Look at...
Yeah, he's pretty big.
I'm telling you.
Bodied him down.
The last time you saw a dude come into the league with a slighter frame and then just bulk it up like that quick was Dwight Howard.
Ben Simmons got the revenge on a rebound, like put back. So Giannis wasn't aware of where he was, so he got dunked over.
Right. They're two different kind of dunks, both of them nasty in their own.
Yeah, for sure.
You can talk trash after either one.
But the one going down where you're backing a dude down, just imposing your
will
on him.
That's just big boy. That's when somebody calls you a baby.
Exactly. That's what you can do. All right. So these two dudes, probably the future of the NBA. Which one would you take? Which one would you rather have for the next 10 years in the NBA?
So let me...
Joel Embiid or Giannis?
I'm going to qualify it.
Okay.
Can I kind of straddle the fence?
Are you going to use health?
All right. Yeah, I am. Because I have...
That's a no-brainer.
I have a concern with Joel Embiid, not just because he's missed games early in his career, but because I was kind of privy to some of that, like the draft workups that they did on him, and apparently there's some real issues there that could present themselves with his back. And so if I'm factoring that in and you only give me one pick, I'm probably going to take Giannis. Giannis still has room to grow with that jumper and all of that stuff. But if we're talking apples to apples, nobody's going to get hurt, I might take Joel Embiid because he's already more well-rounded offensively than Giannis is. Like, he shoots it. He scores on a lot of levels. He can face the basket. He can go back to the basket. He facilitates. Joel Embiid is fantastic. But because of the health concern, I'd probably take Giannis.
What weight would you put on Embiid's, like, social media flair? And like, it's, you know, like, it's smart out. Like, he seems like a little bit of a smart.
Yeah. Some guys, I think some guys get.
Would that bother you at all?
No. Cause some guys get consumed by it and they have, like, here's the deal. If Westbrook, if he had Westbrook tendencies in terms of engaging all the fans and letting fans get under his skin, and I thought it was a distraction for him, then I would put some concern. It would weigh into my decision a little bit, but he seems to, like, be very, very, like, confident in that it is all staying on social media. He doesn't let it really factor into his on-court production. He doesn't really wind up engaging with a lot of fans and getting texts and getting kicked out. So I don't think it's a distraction for him at all.
I would take Giannis because of the health factor. Like, him being healthy and Joel Embiid have so much uncertainty, I think it would be a no-brainer. Like, sure. If you were going to back up a $200 million max contract,
yeah,
I'm betting on the guy that's been healthy and would do that. Not to say that Embiid couldn't have a better career. I'm just not willing to take that risk if I'm a team.
And, I mean, like, Joel's awesome, but Giannis's team is number one in the East right now.
Right.
Like, they're sitting ahead of Joel's team. Their numbers are, you know, he's a 7-footer in his own right. He's 6'11". They're just different styles, you know?
I still feel like, not sleeping on, but I feel like we're overlooking the Celtics. They're still the third favorite in the Eastern Conference from Vegas, ahead of the 76ers. Because they had all their drama, I think a lot of people wrote them off and were like, this team has issues. But as long as they get right and they start winning, like, they can get as hot as anybody.
If Richard Hamilton and them, like, disagreed with me and wrote me off when I said this a few weeks ago, if they figure it out and they're playing well, the Celtics are a very dangerous team in the playoffs. Like, but if ifs was a fifth, we'd all be drunk, right? Like, I love to say that. Like, there's no guarantee that that would happen. But yes, if they figure it out, they're sharing the ball, they're defending, and that offense is firing on all cylinders, they're very, very dangerous. Big blow to Milwaukee, though. Malcolm Brogdon, I think they lose him for, what was it, like 4-6 or, you know, 4-8. Does anybody in the back know exactly how long he's out?
I don't know.
He's a big piece of what they do. He's one of those guys that you really can't, like, not going to do anything at a star level, but does everything at a really, really valuable level. Mm-hmm. And those guys are really essential to what you do in the playoffs.
The Knicks and Lakers were also in action, and it keeps getting worse. And it's what we do now. It's the LeBron effect. And when you're LeBron, you're going to get criticized for every little thing you do. So Clyde Frazier is calling the game for the Knicks from their home broadcast. LeBron goes over at the end of the bench during a timeout. There was clearly separation. There was a team huddle that was taking place.
Right.
Clyde Frazier doesn't like it. He said, this type of behavior, when you're the face of the NBA, you should be more a part of your team, folks. No matter what is going on in the public, you got to be part of the team. Maybe in the locker room you're not, but you have to exude that type of togetherness in public. And right now, we see he doesn't really care. Agree or disagree with Clyde?
I think that it's easy for people to take shots at LeBron right now, and it's easy to point out those little things that LeBron has probably done his whole career. Like, if you watch a lot of film of LeBron's timeouts, no matter where he is, he probably has interactions kind of like he did at that Knicks game where, you know, if he's not in the game or it's late in the game or whatever, like, the team might be doing one thing. LeBron might be over there talking to someone. He was talking to Tyson Chandler, right?
Yeah.
Like, there are probably a lot of instances like that, but his teams were winning. Nobody was really talking about him. And now you're going to kick him while he's down to some degree, right? Like, the Lakers aren't playing well. LeBron doesn't look like himself. And it's easy right now. That's low-hanging fruit. And so, like, to some degree, I agree with you, Clyde. But LeBron's always done this. So I really don't really have a huge beef with it.
It's all about optics, right?
Yeah.
I think today's player, though, and LeBron has been one of the key guys that has stated this, like, I don't care what anybody thinks.
They really don't.
And because all the money is in the barn. Like, the hay is in the barn.
Right.
They've got all the millions of dollars. They don't care what people think. And I think that's probably where LeBron is now. I did think it was a fair criticism, but I understand. Like, I'm kind of with you. Like, I think it's one of those things where it's the LeBron effect. What he was getting crushed for, what I don't understand at all, because I think it's totally reasonable, is after the game, when he got blocked by Hezonja to end the game, which was nasty, and it was an embarrassing way to go, he bolted. And I have no problem with that. That, to me, shows me that he's care, that he's ticked off, that he's mad they just lost, and he got blocked. He doesn't want to stick around and give pleasantries. Like, because sometimes we crush guys for looking too friendly, and then we're going to be mad at a guy because he walks off the court after a game. Like, I'm not going to do that. I think he's emotional. They just lost. It was embarrassing. He just wants to get the heck out of there.
Yeah, look, if you have a responsibility to do the media and you didn't do it, like, as long as you accept whatever, you know, the slap on the wrist would be for that, I'm fine with that.
I'm talking about right on the court. Oh, he didn't even go around and dap up anybody else. And, like, he didn't.
No, I don't care. I don't really care.
Walked off the court. People were crushing him.
What do you want? He's salty, bro. He just lost the game.
Exactly, which I have no problem with whatsoever.
I do think, though, that the Hosonia block, like, you know, it's interesting. Like, you know, he doesn't look like himself, like LeBron. And it's hard right now because I've always maintained that I don't think he came back 100% healthy after that injury. And that's one of those injuries because I've had groins and adductors. You don't typically find your health. You don't play your way into being healthy. If you're dealing with it, it's lingering. The only time it ever really gets 100% is when you can shut down, like get it all the way back to 100% and then build your leg and core strength back up. So I think he probably came back at like 85, 90%. And at this point, probably be operating like 75% because it just gradually gets worse.
So shouldn't they shut him down?
I hope it's that. I hope it's not just to where he's not going to beat a lot of people off the bounce anymore because it's a huge part of his game. It's being able to get downhill on guys. And when you can't get that separation getting downhill anymore, you know, you're not the same player. You're just not. And it, you know, it happens to everyone. But then the question is, what do you do to supplement? Like, what part of your game do you add for the subtraction of that part of your game? And that would be the question for LeBron. If he is going to play this last third of his career or last fourth of his career in championship mode, if you can't beat people off the bounce like you used to, what are we going to do now? That's the question he's got to answer.
Wouldn't you shut him down then?
If I were the Lakers.
Because that's like on the scale of likability with LeBron, that's one of the things I appreciate that he did try to come back, maybe not 100%, to try to carry them in the playoffs. But now that they're done, I get the minutes restriction, but there's no way to get healthy. You know this better than I've never had
it. I mean, he gobbled that up. Look at that.
Yeah,
he's like, that's not fingertips.
No.
He's palming that.
No, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
That's why LeBron ran off the court. That and they blew a 13, or they gave a 13-1 run to finish the game. That's why he's running off the court. But I appreciate LeBron came back, but it does make me wonder why they still even play him at all.
It's a good question. And the part I didn't talk about is that LeBron looks disinterested in it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so if I see LeBron out there and I'm wondering if he's healthy, and then he's not really, like, he's competing, but it doesn't look like he's razor sharp mentally out there. You've seen a lot of little things from LeBron. And to be fair to LeBron, this might have just been a miscalculation. It might have just been like he wasn't mentally really engaged like he would be when something was really on the line. And in either case, if he's not 100% healthy and you don't think he's like mentally engaged in it right now, it probably could be a conversation where like, look, what are we doing this for? Like, you know, let's really scale it back. Let's just say that thing needs, you know, to heal up and let's ride off into free agency.
Because I do think what matters the most is next season, obviously, if you're a Lakers fan. And if you look like your play is starting to taper off, like if you're Anthony Davis, you're watching this and you're thinking, man, is it as attractive? And we've already seen other people, you know, start to, you know, you haven't seen the free agents line up saying, hey, I can't wait to go play with LeBron. So that's why I almost felt like it's your best thing is to say, hey, he was hurt.
Let's get him
off there and start looking for next year.
It's a great point because if you are one of these young dudes, you know, you still have this vision of LeBron, right? Like
this generation.
But is he?
Right.
Like right now. You know, that's the question. Is he? And so, you know, from purely a pieces to move standpoint, I don't think the Lakers are really in the Anthony Davis sweepstakes anymore. Like, Lonzo Ball's injured all the time, hasn't really given you enough of a sample size to really know if he's really good.
Brandon Ingram just underwent this TOS decompression surgery.
You saw what it did to Markelle Fultz. Like, I'm not touching that.
Right.
If I'm the New Orleans Pelicans, what else do you really have to give me?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So I don't even think the Lakers are in the Anthony Davis sweepstakes. And I don't really know, like, if I was one of these marquee free agents, if LeBron and hitching my cart to that at this point would be what I wanted to do. Like,
right.
I don't have the answer to it, but there's going to be a lot of people out there asking themselves and their camp, hey man, is it really going to be what we think it was? Is it really going to be what it was 4 years ago to play with LeBron?
Yep. It's definitely going to be an interesting offseason for the NBA and LeBron as he tries to do a little bit of damage control with the Lakers and their perspective moving forward for sure. All right. Welcome back, Kinnell and Bell. So obviously, if you're a bad team in the NBA.
Yep.
NBA really is the league that really started the tanking phenomenon, and your boy saying,
"Yeah, we're always cutting edge,
right?
Like, we're always ahead
exactly ahead of the game." What's the? It's not tank for Zion. What was the
road? It was the road.
The road.
Yeah,
it's Zion.
Lauryn Hill.
Exactly.
Shout out Lauryn Hill and my man Ro Marley.
I was gonna say,
no doubt.
Rohan.
No doubt.
They still together?
No.
Oh dang it! I'll be back because I like Rohan. I like they're a good couple.
Good
maybe they can get back together one day. So the Suns Pelicans are obviously they're on the road to Zion or trying to. They're facing each other. Over the weekend on Saturday, They go to overtime. Can you fill me in on some of these details? Because you saw it.
So, yes. Pelicans have the ball up three with 6.5 to go. Inbounding it. Alfred Payton goes to call a timeout. And my man Alvin Gentry runs down and screams, no, don't call a timeout, don't call a timeout. So they take the 5-second call. Phoenix gets the ball. They do not foul Josh Jackson. He knocks down the three free throws. And immediately Alvin Gentry, who just told his player not to call the timeout because they didn't have any, motions for a timeout. They bang him with the tech. And the Suns, Devin Booker, hits two free throws to win the game. So two schools with, I got inner conspiracy theorist says Alvin Gentry's a genius.
Right.
They lost that on purpose.
Yeah.
I think Alvin just had like a brain fart. Like, I think he just kind of forgot.
He said after the game, I thought we had one left. We didn't have one left. That was all on me. I'll take the hit for that one. Or he's the biggest hero in New Orleans right now.
Or he saved the road to Zion.
How many coaches are there reminding him about the number of timeouts?
In that moment, like he's got coaches
so
that do
fast.
It, but in that moment when they hit that three, he was standing, everyone was sitting, and he just was like this.
Right.
That's just knee jerk. Like when you've coached in the NBA for decades,
like
you're probably fighting to convince yourself that you don't have all those timeouts, because it used to be where you could save timeouts and have five of them. You remember old NBA games? Every time someone scored a bucket down the stretch, timeout.
Yeah.
And the other team would score a bucket, timeout. Timeout. And they just keep advancing it. You can't do that anymore. So he probably might have been just back in old Alvin Gentry mode where he had like 9 timeouts left.
The current lottery odds have the Suns, Cavs, and Knicks as the favorites to potentially land Zion or the number one overall pick at 14%. The Bulls, Hawks, Grizzlies, Mavs. That's kind of the rest of the world. The Pelicans are at 6%. Selfishly.
Yeah.
And I think if you're Adam Silver.
There's only one place he needs to go.
There is only one place he needs to go, and that's the Big Apple.
That's Nueva, baby.
Oh, my goodness.
Only one spot.
That would be fantastic. And then if you paired him with Kyrie and Kevin Knox, who they already got, has been a pretty good rookie.
Yeah.
They all of a sudden could be really relevant. And the NBA, I think, is setting up. I think the NBA is having a rough year, but I think once the Warriors are broken up as a super team,
yep.
The NBA is just going to, like, skyrocket, especially when they get Zion in and some of these other young players.
The East is exciting again. Yep. Do you imagine that the super team's over this year? What do you think?
Because I think Durant leaves.
You think he bounces?
I think Klay Thompson returns, but I think that's enough star power.
Oh, yeah.
I think that they're going to be good and obviously
sure.
Probably be one of the top favorites in the NBA. But once they get Durant out of there, because where's he going to go? Wherever he goes is going to be good. Like, what
correct.
If he goes to New York?
No, correct.
And
there's already a level of fatigue in Golden State. Once
totally.
They lose Kevin Durant, they're going to be as vulnerable. I mean, they'll be susceptible to being beat.
Right. So I think the NBA is setting up really good. This year, not so much. Next year, I think they'll be a monster year. You love refs, umpires, and all that.
Yeah.
Did you happen to see what happened in baseball? Because A.J. Hinch was ejected and suspended for one game for a spring training incident with Angel Hernandez. Which to me is like, it's supposed to be just like dudes are out there before they go out to play golf. You know, they're just kind of taking it easy, but not so much in spring training.
He's suspended for another spring training game?
I think so.
All right. Well, first of all,
it's just an extra day off.
I really wouldn't care less if I was like, it's not really coming out of my paycheck at that point, so I don't care.
I love that Hinch afterwards didn't hold back. He said he gets 4 wrong a game. About his strike zone. He is a polarizing umpire that has taken a lot of heat, a lot of criticism. And Hinch yelled at him during the game. He said, you've used all 4 of your bad calls.
So look, when you're showing, I've always said this, when you're showing a ref up and you're out there in his face and yelling and screaming on him, I don't have a problem with the ref tossing you or the ump.
Right.
Like you've then showed him up. I have a problem with the ones where refs could very easily like disengage and walk away, or someone hasn't made a big show out of it and they feel like it's their job to police the game to some degree and they want to kick you out. Those are the ones that I take exception with. But I still don't understand, and this is like, I know I'm going to upset baseball purists if any of them watch our show. Why the hell is that not a computer simulated thing right now? Why can't it be balls and strikes?
I like it because I feel like it's part of the artistry of the game.
Let them do it.
Nuance.
No, dude, listen. Right here in my ear, right? You get a ping for a strike or a ball, and you can still do whatever you want.
I didn't mean it from a drama like let them do their calls.
Yeah.
I meant some umpires have a different strike zone, And that's part of the game. Like, you have to figure it out as a pitcher. You might be able to get
the
ball
Clue?
Just outside the plate.
Well, I'm putting it in the envelope. I'm doing it with a lead pipe in this conservatory. No, it should be the same.
That. I like that there's a little nuance. I love it.
The baskets change in every
have
arena you go in?
There.
What, there are dead spots on different backboards, so you don't know how to shoot the glass?
But you know, some refs call a different game. Some guys will let you be a little more physical. Some guys won't. Football, you have some guys let PI go a little bit. Some of them call a really tight game. You have to figure it out. That's part of your, like, process.
This is one of those things.
I love it.
No, dude, it's a strike zone. If they can show me, when I'm watching playoff baseball,
I hate the K-zone.
If they can show me the animated thing where that ball slides and it catches
that.
The corner,
I hate
it should
that.
Be, he can still do it.
All right, I have a question.
Whatever he wants to do.
I have a question to ask you about Russell Westbrook. Yeah. He got his 16th technical foul. So from now on, if he gets another one, he's going to get suspended a game for every tech. If you're a team that's facing him, do you have a guy that's designated to get in his head and try to draw a technical? Or why wouldn't you, would be my thing, because I think you should.
I mean, at this point, because you're a fraternity and you don't want to see your brother lose any more money.
Yeah.
You know what
but
I mean?
If you're an opposing coach, it's the playoffs.
Playoffs are different.
Like,
all bets are off.
You're going to put your
Listen, I don't wish for anybody to get hurt, but if somebody gets hurt in the playoffs, you ain't feeling bad for him. Like, regular season, you might.
That's the thing about me where I love Russ, but that wasn't very smart for him to get his 16 tech with this many games left in the regular season, because now he's going to have to watch every single move he makes.
Right.
He can't play with the same passion.
You're up against the wall now, and you're in the middle of a hunt. They're still hunting for a seeding there in the Western Conference, so he's got to be smarter about that. And again, like, look, I used to get a lot of texts, so I'm not judging, but there's too much riding on his shoulders for him to be, you know, missing games down the stretch.
Yep. Get your brackets in. Get them filled out. Join our group at Canal and Bell. We'll beat you.